Game On 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to Super Subs, Chris and Kira. It's Friday, the 23rd of July. Coming up on Game On tonight, we get the latest from Tokyo as the 2020 Olympic Games are underway. Ahead of a crunch weekend of championship football, we preview all the action with Paul Kerrigan. We talk All-Ireland qualifiers with Shane McGrath. Stephen Ferris has the last word on the lines ahead of tomorrow's first test. And just a few days out from the Galway Festival, we speak to Jane Mangan. Now, if you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. I hope everybody enjoyed the Olympic Games opening ceremony. The flame was lit earlier today and the Olympic Games have officially begun. Boxers Kelly Harrington and Brendan Irvine led out the Irish team at that opening ceremony in Tokyo's National Stadium and did an absolutely super job as well. But there already have been some Irish athletes in action early this morning. Sunita Puspure won her opening heat in the women's single sculls and now progresses to the quarterfinals. Sunita being one of our big medals hopes. While in the men's double sculls, Ronan Byrne and Philip Doyle finished fourth in their heat and now they must row in tomorrow's repechage. Damien O'Mara is there for us and he reports.
Today is a moment of hope. Yes, it is very different from what all of us had imagined. But let us cherish this moment. Finally, we are all here together. Welcome to the Olympic Games Tokyo 2020.
The president of the IOC, Thomas Bach, there declaring the games of the 32nd Olympics open. It was an opening ceremony unlike any which has gone before, one many people will hope will live on in history as one of a kind. Japan's new national stadium, the Olympic stadium for these games, a 68,000 capacity stadium, virtually empty, but for 1,000 dignitaries, guests and members of the media. The Irish delegation, it consisted of around 20 people and was led into the stadium by flag bearers Kelly Harrington and Brendan Irvine. Now, in advance of the official opening of the Games, the first members of Team Ireland have seen competition. Amongst them, one of the country's strongest medal hopes, Sunita Puspure. The multiple world and European champion made short work of her competitors to comfortably win Heat 2 of the women's single sculls.
I was just focusing on my own race and the start wasn't great, but I have a few more days to work on it. Just executed the race plan, that's it. First race done, delighted.
It's all about getting through at this stage, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Just getting through the rounds and now I'm on to the quarterfinals and so just going to rest up for a couple of days.
Now, I know you've said you have unfinished business after London, after Rio. This is one you really want to fight for and you look like you're in great shape.
Well, I'm not going to think that far. So at this point, it's just focusing on one race at a time and not thinking too far ahead. So that's what we're doing at the moment.
How good is it to finally get out on the water? I know it's the year-long delay and I know you found parts of lockdown very tough and to keep on going and to keep on training.
Yeah, we're finally here. It's been a long year, but at the same time, it went quite fast. So just delighted to see teams doing so well. And this extra year was kind of good in that way. Yeah, we have a massive team here, so it's very exciting comparing to London, so, and even Rio. Can't wait to see what they do.
Sunita with Claire McNamara, she is in quarterfinal action on Sunday. There was disappointment in the men's double sculls for Ronan Byrne and Philip Doyle. They never really managed to get going. Finished fourth and last in their heat. They now move into the repechage. Irish interest ramps up considerably tomorrow. Activity across a number of sports. Amongst those, the hockey squad, who will make history for the sport in Ireland when they face South Africa in their Olympic debut. Likewise, set to be much focused, no doubt, on Reese McClenaghan in the men's artistic gymnastics. We also have the first Irish swimmers in the pool. Ellen Walsh in the heats of the women's 100 metres butterfly and Dara Green, who goes in the men's 100 metres breaststroke.
First Olympic Games, even though it's during COVID, it still doesn't take away the fact it's the Olympic Games. So, yeah, it's unreal.
And you've been to the pool too. It looks incredibly impressive. What have you thought of it?
Yeah, the pool is amazing, absolutely amazing. It's one of the best venues I've ever been to. It would have been unbelievable to even have a crowd there. It's one of those buildings that would be so loud. But it still won't take away the fact of the swim on Saturday.
How challenging is it with the COVID restrictions? Do you find it difficult in training? Is it just around the village and that? What are the differences to a normal tournament for you?
It'd be more so the whole fact of keep it to yourself. So we stay to our apartments and stuff, especially just before the competition itself, because you just wouldn't put yourself in any situation to get it. So it's kind of like you wouldn't be hanging around the village too much. You'd be up to the room and down to the food hall. We're lucky enough, we're building straight across from the food hall, so we don't have much of a commute, much walking around. So that's really it.
Now, in advance of the swimming getting underway tomorrow, Shane Ryan was forced to withdraw from his preferred event, the 100 metres backstroke. He's been dealing with a shoulder injury. It is specific to the movement that's required in the backstroke, so it means he will be able to compete in the 100 metres butterfly and also the 4x200 metres relay.
With Green Fern, naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Now, as you heard before the break, there are lots of Irish athletes in action over the weekend, so plenty to look forward to. Also, plenty of Gaelic Games action as well. Two massive provincial football finals, Kerry versus Cork in Munster and Galway versus Mayo in Connacht. And to talk us through both of those games, former Cork footballer Paul Kerrigan joins us now on the line. Paul, really, really good contest ahead, I reckon, as well, and probably hard to decide which one will be better. But let's start with Cork and Kerry, because you're obviously a former Cork player. And when you think about it, it's not that long ago, really, since Kerry went out and surprised everyone by defeating Kerry in that Munster Championship last year. So when you think of the confidence that they have and the fact that Kerry will probably be looking for revenge, it does have all the ingredients to be a cracker.
Yeah, I suppose obviously Kerry were probably criticised and probably no more than by themselves, you know, after we beat them last year. I suppose we hadn't beaten them really since 2012, so it was a long time. And look, I think like they really answered it with the league. They came out all guns blazing against Galway first day out, and then obviously had a really good game against Dublin, and then obviously had a really good day out again against Tyrone towards the end of the league. And they've carried that through to the Championship. Look, so they've answered whatever questions was asked them, really, in terms of hunger and attitude, let's say, after the defeat last year. And I suppose in Clarny, again, we also beat them in Parky Cleeve. They're a different animal in Clarny. We haven't won there since the mid-90s. So, look, it'd be a tough game for Cork.
Do you think that Kerry are better than last year? And I suppose particularly people will be looking at that forward unit and the addition of Paddy Clifford and the extra element that he brings.
Oh yeah, I think there's no doubt they're much better. They're playing to their strengths, definitely. I think, Paddy Clifford, obviously he's been around with East Kerry for the last couple of years in the County Championship, and he's really kind of taken his game to another level. And he's not only is he just sitting in and doing his job, he's really adding to their attack, so that's very admirable. And then you see, like, Paul Gainey kind of he rotates between the full forward line and wing forward. And, like, he's obviously, as he's got older, he's modified his game a little bit, because between Clifford and Sean O'Shea, they're such good forwards to try to get into that forward unit. And, look, they have massive depth as well, I think, up front alone, Burns, Killian Spillane, these guys, come on, they have massive impact the last couple of games. So there's no doubt, I think they've built very much a good strength and depth, and they're playing to their strengths, kind of their kicking game from the backs. They've sorted out their defence, maybe only conceding 1-8 and 1-11 in the Championship game so far. So, yeah, I think there's no doubt. I think they're probably the foreign team in the country, so they've hugely improved, yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny because Paddy Clifford is so good, and he's adding such another dimension to that Kerry attack, and he's just been this brilliant link man. But I think probably because he's David's brother, he's not getting as much credit probably as he deserves almost.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I suppose with David Clifford around, there's not too many other forwards are getting credit. But in fairness to Paddy, he got man of the match last game, gave an interview about all Pierre Keane tells him to do is play to his strengths, and that baseline is working hard and getting tackles in and getting turnovers. And he's getting busy for Kerry, and when they get the turnovers higher up the field, that means he's probably getting on the ball then, and he can pull the strings a bit there to get it into his brother.
Okay, so we have mentioned David Clifford. What are Cork going to do with him?
Yeah, I suppose it'd be interesting to see who will go on him. Mara Shanley picked him up last year, but he's out. He done the hamstring in the league, so he's out. You're probably looking at either Sean Meehan or Kevin Flahive to mark him. Flahive marked him 2 years ago. Look, whoever's on him, it won't be just one. I think they'll definitely flood numbers back to the middle third of the field, and then if they into the other sector and try to keep one in front of the Clifford and whoever's inside with him. So, look, I think they won't play sweepers like Tip did, but they will flood bodies back, maybe getting half-forwards back to the half-back positions and half-backs tucking in. So, look, that's what they're going to try to do, and obviously try to get massive pressure on the ball coming in, because the ball coming into Clifford and likes so far has been top class. So I think the middle third pressure, and then obviously if they can't get the pressure on there, they might drop bodies back into their own 45.
Yeah, it's going to be intriguing. I think not just for Cork fans, but for football fans in general, just to see how they do handle Clifford and everyone that's around him as well. But just from a Cork point of view, Sean Poucher, it seems, is fit, and he's a huge addition and boost, really.
Yeah, I think everyone probably thought it was maybe a recurrence of the hamstring against Limerick, and thankfully I think it was only a dead leg. And look, he's probably, himself and Ian Maguire are our two best players. Unfortunately, Sean hasn't played as many games as he'd like through the years through injury, though he's been around since 2016. And generally when he does play, he's our best player, or up there as one of our best players. So a massive boost to have him. And I think even though he's a half-back, he's probably one of Cork's main players, as in the two Cliffords are for Kerry. So I think Kerry will definitely maybe have something in store for him too.
Yeah, and he seemed quite confident as well during the week, you know, just that they would be able to go out and get the job done.
Yeah, he backs himself, in fairness. Mm-hmm. Since he's come on to the panel, he kind of, since young fella, he's played, and he's actually done well in Clare in his debut season. And he kind of backs himself, and look, it's no harm. He's come through some tough times at injury, and in fairness, any time he's played, he's backed it up. So it's good from, let's say, his point of view as one of the leaders in the team, that he's having a positive attitude going through the weekend, because most people are writing Cork off, you know, and it's good to have one of your leaders being kind of vocal and having a bit of belief going down there.
Yeah, when it comes to going out and playing Kerry, I think a lot of the time, just given the statistics, Cork are written off before the game has even started. What's it like being in a setup when that happens?
Yeah, I think I've never, even though we've got some trimmings off, and to be fair, before a game, we never felt that we were going to get a hiding. You always felt that you're in with a chance. And look, you'd often hear the Kerry fellas saying, never write off Cork. And look, they beat us for six, seven times in a row in the last couple of years. And we caught them then last year in 2020. So look, it's the reverse as well. Cork, people would have that feeling that, look, it's a great opportunity. And you know, maybe Kerry might have a different idea when the ball is thrown in, but you'd always have a belief that something could happen, because it's a really healthy rivalry, you know, and you'd like to think when the ball is thrown in, it's 50-50, and whatever happens after that happens then.
So, as you mentioned, it was 1995 the last time that Cork beat Kerry in Killarney. Is that a big factor when Cork teams are going there to play?
Probably is. It's something that definitely comes up in the build-up to games, in the media and stuff like that. And I'd say, to be fair, it's Kerry's badge of honour, not just Cork. They have a very good home record, you know. They've beaten the likes of Tyrone down there, Mayo down there very well, comprehensively. So we're not going to keep to lose to them down there. But I suppose it's coming off the back of when Cork were kind of successful in the late 80s and early 90s, and they kind of maybe had it over them. And in fairness to them, they've kind of shut up shops since, and we've been down there in the past and could have came out with a result, but we didn't, and that's credit to Kerry too, you know. So it's always something that's probably to talk about in the build up to the games, especially in Killarney.
So call that one for us.
If I was a betting man, I'd say Kerry, but I'd gladly lose that money, do you know what I mean? So
look, it was only what, 8 months ago. Look, you know, things haven't changed that much, really.
And the year before, they I suppose kind of brought it, was 3 points, I think, they beat us by in the park, you know. So the kick of all in the last 2 years. So hopefully the lads, and I think they will give a good account of themselves.
Right, so let's move on to Mayo and Galway. And the fact that it is in Croke Park does make it extremely intriguing. And I think it's probably especially because people are saying, heading into this game, that the venue is going to give Mayo an advantage because they're so used to playing there and they're so comfortable playing in there. What do you reckon?
Yeah, it's great. It's kind of a historic final, and in the times we are, they have a pretty big crowd. I think there's 18,000 going to be there. So, look, I'd say the players are buzzing for it. I know Mayo are probably slight favourites, again, like, if you look at their team compared to the team 2 years ago, it's almost like a new team, and James Horan, like, he deserves massive praise for that. Like, I suppose the original Mayo team of, let's say, the 2010s, he took them and he moulded them in his way, and they were always very well coached, very well prepared, always played well on most championship days. So, and in fairness to him, he's done it again with these young group of lads, and they've been ruthless. They've huge athleticism, the likes of Hessian, Mullen, McLaughlin, Ryan O'Donoghue, Tommy Conroy. So they've all come, and he's brought them again. And look, they're a young team, I suppose. A lot of them, they're fresh off playing an All-Ireland final as well last year. So it's year two, so they're not complete rookies, let's say. But on the other hand, I'd say Galway are probably happy enough. It's gone to Croke Park. I was listening to Paul Joyce during the week, and he was saying that, you know, and he's kind of happy to move there. The young fellas are buzzing and to play there, and maybe the older guys are happy to get back there. They haven't been there as much as they like. So I think it will be a close one. I think that should be a good game of football. But I think Mayo maybe might have the slight advantage.
Yeah, I think as well it will be one that will be keenly contested, and they're evenly matched up. But from a Mayo point of view, you probably have to be a little bit worried just given the run-in that they've had. Come through Division 2, so Clare was obviously their biggest test there. And then games against Sligo and Leitrim, where they, you know, we all saw the Leitrim game. It wasn't a test for them at all. Do you think they're going to be a little bit undercooked coming in? Galway did have to overcome a tough test against Roscommon.
Yeah, I suppose Mayo previously have often, like, they might have maybe not got to the pitch of where they like through Connacht, still won Connacht, and then come and performed in Croke Park. So I don't think they'll be undercooked. I think they mightn't have been tested, but we've talked about Kerry's strength and depth. Mayo, maybe James Horan would have tested guys throughout the league. I suppose the last championship game, due to COVID, he threw a few guys in as well. So look, I don't think they'll be coming undercooked. Galway then kind of did an intriguing enough league, like, I suppose, well beaten by Kerry at the start, and then gave the good account of themselves against the Dubs, and I suppose beat Roscommon in the league, and then done very well in Clonus and Monaghan, but obviously to a last minute point were relegated, and then beat Monaghan again in the championship, where they were a bit cagier, you know, they were kind of held on to the ball a bit longer and were a bit more composed. I suppose Galway have only, let's say, beaten Roscommon twice this year, whereas Mayo haven't lost a game yet, so it'll be interesting either way.
Yeah, and we were talking about, you know, how big a boost is it when a player is fit, and you would hope that Shane Walsh should be fit. And it'd be interesting then, like, the dynamic between himself and Comer would be definitely worth tuning in for.
Yeah, like, you'd hope, like, it's great to see Damien Comer back, you know, he's a powerhouse of a forward and can play both lines. And obviously someone like Shane Walsh, like, he's kind of made for Croke Park, the open spaces and the pace. And himself, I think Paddy Durkin has picked him up the last couple of times, and that's always a good duel. So you want to see the best players on show up in Croke Park. So hopefully the likes of Shane Walsh and Lee Keegan and Dermot O'Connor and all these lads are back, you know.
Yeah, I was at the Leitrim Mayo game and I was watching Dermot O'Connor as he warmed up. Thought he might get on, but looks like he could be have been saved for this game. So just seeing a player of his calibre as well, getting him back, and when you think that they're missing Killian and they're missing Keegan, and just having that leadership of somebody like him would be vital.
Exactly, and I think Kevin McLaughlin, obviously Lee Keegan, and I think Henley were out the last game, who were all their kind of older heads, you know, really. So and it's interesting as well when Dermot O'Connor comes into the team, where does Aidan O'Shea go? Does he stay around the middle, or does he alternate between 11 and 14? So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it. It should be a great game.
Yeah, and even from the COVID point of view, look, we were talking about the difficulties that the Lions in South Africa faced, and the fact that when a lot of those South African players are coming back, that we don't know how COVID is going to affect players as well. And, you know, that's a bit the same with Mayo. Look, you're very conscious that, you know, it was kept in-house and all the rest, but at the same time, you know, there was a COVID outbreak there, and you would just hope that everybody's okay and fit and well to play.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you'd obviously the Lions, but you'd hear soccer teams, like, it affects different people in different ways, and, you know, it takes some people an awful long time to recover. And I think someone like Newcastle in this Premiership this year were badly affected by it, like, where lads couldn't recover. So you just hope from their point of view, and then obviously from our point of view watching the football, that they recover and get into it. And Mayo will probably need the boys back as well, you know, to try and get over this one, and then to have a go off the Dubs, let's say, in the All-Ireland semi, you know. So the likes of Kevin McLaughlin, Dermot O'Connor, I suppose Killian, his brother, would have, for the big games in Croke Park, would have done the bulk of the scoring. So they're going to have to up their scoring power all round, and those guys would definitely help.
Okay, so call this one for us.
Yeah, I'd slightly go to Mayo. I think Galway will give him a good game, though.
Okay, Paul Kerrigan, thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy the football at the weekend and actually enjoy all of the sport.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Firm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On Now. So as well as Olympic Games, Gaelic football, Lions, which we'll be talking about a little bit later, and racing, which we will also be talking about a little bit later with Jane Mangan, we also have hurling, two absolutely massive All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship qualifiers. Waterford versus Galway and Clare versus Cork. So we are going to lose two really, really big teams this weekend. And to predict who they might be is Shane McGrath. Shane.
Marie.
How are you?
Super. Tan well, is on.
The water's
clothes
on?
Are out drying.
Did you say the tan,
the tan
is on?
Yeah, yeah. All natural. The clothes are out drying. The grass is being cut. It's all good.
I'd say you have a farmer's tan, do you?
Yeah, I pretty much do, yeah. Down to the bottom of the sleeve and up three quarters way up the small little legs. But yeah, that'll do the job. We're happy enough with that.
I saw Lee Chin's farmer's tan the other day and I thought, well, if Lee Chin can pull that off and make it look cool, that all the kids out there now will be going for the Lee Chin farmer's tan. It was very impressive, just under the sleeve of the jersey.
Yeah, he has the guns there to pull it off as well, you know, so...
Right.
I wouldn't be trying to compare myself to him now.
Right, well, let's move on because we do have two massive games. And we're going to start with Clare and Cork because I'm from Clare and that's what I want to do, Shane. So, look, it's two very different preparations heading into this. Clare have had some really tough tests. They've had quite a lot of games. Cork, on the other hand, you could say that they're probably a little bit undercooked, or else you could say that they've had a rest, depending on what way you want to look at it. And I think especially when you consider the weather, which side of the fence would you be on when it comes to that?
I'm probably on the side of the fence of the team coming in with momentum. And like everyone will have their arguments for and against both sides. For me, I think the Clare lads are coming into it in a great place. They'll be playing now their fourth championship match. And I was in Thurles last week to see them, and like the start they made in the first quarter was unbelievable. And they have started really, really well in all their games. Like they outscored Waterford 7-3 in the first quarter. They would have started really, really well against Tip in the first quarter. Their foundation of their win the last Emery was built on the first quarter as well, because they won it 1-9 to 3. And Wexford actually won all the rest of the quarters in the game. But
we've lost Shane now. We're going to have to try and get him back in a second. I'm just going to hang up on him now. So, yeah, so that game, Clare versus Cork on Saturday is at 4:30 in the Gaelic Grounds. And we're also going to have Waterford and Galway Semple Stadium at 2 p.m. And I think what a lot of people will be interested in as well is the fact that there are going to be crowds there. So having initially been capped at 500, confirmation emerged on Thursday afternoon that 4,400 would be able to attend Waterford Galway in Semple Stadium, while 3,500 was the crowd allowed for Clare Cork in the LIT Gaelic Ground. So there will be fans there. Shane McGrath, we were just talking about Clare and how they've got a lot of momentum heading into this and they've been starting very strong.
Oh yeah, that's it. Like, and as I was saying, like even for the Wexford game, the last day, outscored Wexford 1-9 to 3, Marian, but they lost all the rest of the quarters, but they're starting really well and they started savage against Waterford as well. Outscored them 7-3, and I think they had 8 wides as well. So they are starting really well. I think they're coming in with a lot of momentum. I think they are a group on a mission, with their manager, with everything that was going on in Clare. The whole world has been against them, and I think they've used that to their benefit. And they've got energy out of it, and they've got hunger out of it, and the group are buzzing at the moment. And I think the massive thing from as well is, the first question we're not asking anymore is, how much will Tony Kelly score? And I think that'll tell you how much the Clare team have improved even from last year. Like in the last few games, even the last day against Wexford, like Tony got 2 points from play. Like he actually scored the least from play from the starting forwards, because Aaron Shanahan got 2, but David Reedy's chipping in with 3, Aidan McCarthy's chipping in with 3, Ryan Taylor's chipping in with 3. And I think that's massive, massive for Clare. You know, they have 9, 10, 11 different scorers now. It's not just Tony and one or two more. And I think that teams now just can't look at Clare and say, if we stop Tony Kelly, we go a long way, because Clare have really become a really, really good group and a really, really good team this year. They're playing with great confidence, they have great momentum, and you know, people are saying, oh, week on week is hard. It is hard, but like, players have never been more in tune with how to recover properly, Marie, or know how to recover properly, and management have never been more in tune with it either. So I'm at the side of the fence for Clare in that regard. And you know, Cork will have had 3 weeks off. They'll be fine-tuning their puck outs, which worked very well for them against Limerick, I have to say. And you know, where lads are going to play, maybe lads need an extra week or two to get up to championship pace. They probably got that maybe in training, but you know, for me, I just feel Clare coming into it in a great place, and they'll be full of confidence. And you know, the 2013 final, as you know well, Marie, it's gassed the turnover of players. Cork have two players still involved in Patrick Horgan and Seamus Harnedy, and Clare will have four players involved if David McInerney starts. So it'll just tell you how quickly time goes, and you know, how much of a turnover there is nowadays in inter-county hurling, like.
Yeah, and how short careers are, for sure. And I think as well, from a Clare point of view, Aaron Shanahan has been a target man. You can see, you can almost see what he's capable of, but I don't think we've seen the best of him yet. So at some stage, he's probably going to fire as well.
Yeah, and I like, even the first thing is Waterford, I was at the game, and I had, you know, you'd be making your notes, and I had him notched down. He could have scored 3 goals, maybe 3 points. He didn't score at all. Against Tipton, yeah, he chipped in with a point, but the last day for me, he looked a lot more sharper when it came to shooting. He's got 2 points from play, but he's a serious, serious target man, and oh, I'd love to see him on the edge of the square there himself and Damon Callahan. I think there'd be some battle if the two of them going at it, but you know, he's definitely upped his game and getting a bit sharper, but you know, he's a serious, serious target man for them. And you know, like David Reid, Ian Galvin and Ryan Taylor play off him very well. And I suppose the big disappointment for yourself, Marie, is you know, not having Shane O'Donnell, and you might have heard better than me now, but I'm hearing that this concussion he got is a lot worse than what was first feared. We all thought maybe a week, 2 weeks is the protocol, but I'm hearing now that he might be lucky to even play a club championship. So I just want to wish him all the very best with his recovery from the concussion, because any of us who have been unfortunate enough to get one know they're not nice, and we all react differently to them. So hopefully Shane O'Donnell for himself will get back hurling soon.
Yeah, and they seem to, in fairness, be treating it with the seriousness that it deserves as well. There is no expectation on him, from what I gather anyway, to return. It's just all that comes first is his health, and that's exactly the way that it should be. And just in terms of Cork, do you think that we've seen the best of them yet either?
I think we've seen a lot of really good things from against Limerick, right? I mean, if you think about it, when they got the penalty, they were up 1-5, 6 points. And Patrick Horgan, I'd say if he had the penalty 100 times over, he wouldn't have put it where he put it. It was to the right side for Nicky Quaid to save it. But, like, it was 1-5-6. They got it, it was 2-5-6. Next thing, momentum might change. It's all ifs and buts. Patrick Horgan himself didn't score from play the last day. Cannot see that happening again. I know he'll have a point to prove. He'll, the class hurler that he is, he's the leader of the group, that he'll want to have a big, big game himself. You know, even in the last quarter, like they could never get within 3 or 4 points of Limerick. They five wide, you know, they had no score from play, you know, from Hoggy in that last quarter, you know, or at all. So I think there's more in Cork. I do think that they're in a really, really good place. Cork hurling, they're a confident bunch anyway, as we all know, that the People's Republic, like, but I mean, this week alone, or in the last couple of weeks, Marie, winning the under-20 All-Ireland, and their under-20s had a great win against the Tip 20s there Tuesday night, 7 points down at half-time, outscored Tip 2-5 to a point after half-time. Their minor hurlers, the victory that they had, you know, they're under-20 footballers as well. I mean, Cork is just buzzing at the moment, and I'm sure they will ride on the crest of that wave as well, of confidence that they've had from massive victories as well. But, you know, all that being said, I just do still think that the Banner lads are going to do it. I think they're on a mission this year, you know. And like, is either team good enough to win All Ireland? In my opinion, they're not, because of the route they have to take, trying to win 5 games in 5 weeks. It's very, very difficult, you know. You're talking potentially trying to beat, you know, along the way maybe try and beat Tip, Kilkenny, and maybe Limerick. Like, so it would be a very, very tough ask, but to be some All Ireland to win, right? But I think, I still, in all being said, Marie, I still think the Banner lads are going to do it tomorrow night in Carradine.
Okay, and moving on then to Waterford versus Galway. And it's interesting with Galway because they're kind of coming into this game the same way they did against Dublin. You're expecting them to win, but at the same time, you can't help but feel a little bit of nervousness and apprehension about them.
Yeah, look, looking down through the match, the amount of times they've played 11 times and Waterford have won 10. The only one they lost was the 2017 final. And I was going back through the games, like in 2009, in the All-Ireland quarter-final, Galway were the favourites and Waterford beat them. In 2011, another All-Ireland quarter-final, Galway were the favourites, Waterford beat them that day too. And I think it's similar here in that people will look at the way Waterford played against Laois and, you know, be lucky to close out the game. And, you know, they'll obviously see that Galway, there's way more in them than what we've seen against Dublin. Of course there is. They scored 114 in the whole game. I think it's 1-8 or 1-9 from play, which is ridiculous. But, you know, the rumour mill is rife, Marie, you know, that there is a speculation of a COVID case amongst the Galway panel. And if it is, you know, it is to be true, it's the knock-on effects. And I suppose the great Brian Cody put it best when he was asked about the Dublin lads in the Leinster final. And he said, look, it's the COVID case, you know, you'd accept it, but it's the close contacts that can actually cripple the panel. Like, and, you know, if Galway do have that, you know, that will be a knock-on effect maybe for other players. So, look, again, this is all rumours, and we know we all love rumours in the media, so, you know, we'll take it and go with it. But that could be a factor too. Like, but if you talk about Waterford, their game is full of energy and they've lost a lot of guys. They only had 8 guys from the All-Ireland final against Clare, and they had maybe, I know that Jamie Barron and Conor Prunty to add to that the last day, so maybe 9 or 10 guys. So they're getting back maybe to as full strength as they possibly can be without Ty De Burka. But their game requires energy, and they just don't seem to have the energy there at the moment in the group. And, you know, Liam Cahill has referred to it twice now that they were flat and making easy mistakes the last day. And Liam Cahill is a guy, you know, he won't sugarcoat anything. You know, he will say it as it is. And I'm sure he has challenged these lads this week as well to step up, because it's a massive game, really, like, isn't it, for both sets of management. Yeah. Like Shane O'Neill, you know, if he's not getting back maybe into an Ireland final with the group he has, people will say, well, you know, you haven't delivered. And Liam Cahill, you know, gets an All-Ireland final last year and goes out of the qualifier stage this year. So, massive, massive game for both sets, you know. And I do honestly see different Galway setup as well from the last day with, you know, Adrian Toohey was up in the forwards. Like, look at the forward Galway have: Brian Cannon, Conor Whelan, Cahill Mannion, Joe, the Cooneys, Evan Ireland. I don't think you need Adrian Toohey up there. Like, so, I'm sure we'll see a different setup. And you know, Marie, Joe Canning's only 4 points off Henry's record as well. So, I'd say, If he is on the freeze, he'll surely break it. And, you know, what a personal achievement for him as well. 27 goals, and he's 480 points at the moment. He's 4 points off Henry. So all things take into account for the weekend. But if you were asking me who's going to win the game, I do feel that Galway has to win this game for the group that they have, because the window for them to win their second All-Ireland is getting smaller all the time.
Yeah, it really is. And then there's just one other game as well at the weekend. It's Laois and Westmeath to see who survives in Division 1 for next season.
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at both teams for the last few weeks, I was at the Laois Antrim game, was really impressed with them. They totally went away, and I heard the players wanted this, that they wanted to go away from the double sweeper they had against Wexford and that real defensive system. And they went for it against Antrim. They were brilliant. They went for it against Waterford. I mean, after, I think, less than 10 minutes to go, it's 121 to 219, you know what I mean, in favour of Laois. And Waterford hit 2-2, 2-3 afterwards to close out the game in the last 10 minutes. But for me, with the quality of team that Laois have played over the last few weeks, with all due respect to the teams that Westmeath have played, getting to Joe McDonagh and winning it, and winning it well and comfortably against Kerry, I think Laois are coming into this like Clare, with a lot of momentum, having played really, really good teams in the form of Antrim, playing really well against Waterford, and I'd say that bunch will be buzzing. It's a massive, massive game to stay in Division 1 hurling for Westmeath as well, who are, you know, who are trying to make strides all the time, and they want to be at the top level, and they're going to be in Liam McCarthy next year, and Laois the same. They'll want to stay there because the preparation for Championship is to stay in Division 1 of the league, and so it's a massive, massive game for both of them. But I think Laois, with all their best players going really well at the moment, and with the momentum they have, having played the quality of teams they have, I think I fancy Laois to win this game at the weekend, Marie.
Okay, well, we will find out soon enough. Shane McGrath, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break now, and then we're back with the lines.
Game on 2FM.
Fuel your day with Green Fern's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with Marie Crowe. So the Lions test is almost upon us. It's been building up nicely for that first test against South Africa, which takes place tomorrow and will be live here on Game On from 4:45. Former Lions Stephen Ferris joins us now to look ahead to the game. So Stephen, it does feel like we have been building up to this for ages, but it is here now and we have our teams. Are you feeling confident of a Lions win tomorrow?
Yeah, we have our teams. There's been a few mind games during the week, hasn't there? The South Africans naming their team on Tuesday. The British and Irish Lions supposed to come out to the media on Thursday. Then that team was leaked to the media and it was published in a few papers across in the mainland UK. A few mind games, isn't there, between Razzy Erasmus and Warren Gatland. And it's all boiling up very, very nicely. But the teams have been named. Very strong sides, as you would expect. I think the bench, especially for the South Africans, is very, very strong. Lots of power, huge men, World Cup winners on the bench that are going to come on and try and close the game out for them to get the win. But this Lions team, they've picked a couple of players that maybe surprised a few of us, the likes of Ali Price at 9, was certainly a surprise inclusion. And maybe for some of the Welsh fans, they didn't expect to see Jack Conan's name at number 8. They were maybe all thinking that Toby Faletau was going to keep that jersey nailed down, but he's been playing exceptional rugby. And I suppose the other one for me, I really did think that Tadhg Byrne was going to get in ahead of Courtney Laws in the number 6 jersey. He's played a lot of number 6, especially for the Scarlets in the 2016-17 season, where he was brilliant. He's been tremendous on this tour, scoring tries, making line breaks, very good over the balls, we all know, making turnovers. But he misses out on the first team selection. He's on the bench and I'm sure he'll come on and make an impact. But both teams fully loaded, as you would expect. And I just cannot wait, Marie, for this to kick off tomorrow at 5:00.
So we know what the South Africans are capable of, but we don't know if they're going to get there because of that lack of game time or how long it's going to take them to get to the pace of it. So what do the Lions need to do? Where do they need to focus on just to try and get that advantage as quick as possible, really?
Well, they can't give the South Africans a 17-3 head start like they did in the South Africa A game last Wednesday night. You can be sure if they do that, they'll be on the losing end of it. They got to start the game at real high pace, high energy, take the game to the South Africans. The physicality that the South Africans showed in that game in the first 20 minutes was just something that we haven't witnessed probably since the Rugby World Cup final. And, it was just extraordinary, the ferocity that they were getting to the breakdown, especially the breakdowns with. And yes, they did tire in the second half, but they were able to just close the game out. So the British and Irish Lions have got to start fast. They've got to take it to them. They've got to match the physicality stakes. And if they can play a little bit more rugby, get them on the edge a couple of times. We know the up-and-in defence that the South Africans like to play with, even when they're a couple of numbers down. They don't mind backing themselves and making that man-on-ball hit. But, yeah, it's all teed up. I think Warren Gatland wants to play a little bit more expansive game. And a few of the selections would suggest that that's the way he's wanting to go. But, like Dan Biggar at 10... the World Cup semi-final in 2019, he kicked the leather off the ball, as did the South Africans, and it came down to one final kick from Pollard to secure the win. So maybe that is the way that they're going to try and beat them, just keep forcing the ball onto the South Africans to make them make mistakes. But for me, you've got to play a bit more rugby, and I think Warren Gatland will try to do that.
Will it be difficult for them to play the rugby that they wanted, just given the fact that so few of the combinations have played together, and that is something that has been quite a lot of focus on in the lead up to this game?
Yeah, it has, but like these guys have been playing with each other every day in training for the last 5-6 weeks, and I've heard Ronan O'Gara come out and say in the media this week he would prefer like Ireland, England, Scotland or Wales to be playing against the British and Irish Lions this weekend, and for them to get a result more so than the Lions, just because of the familiarity with the lads, the combinations, the relationships that you have built up over time, over years. But that's what the Lions is about. You come together, you knuckle down, you get to know people on and off the pitch, and you leave everything out there. And I really think that Warren Gatland's made the right decision. He's picking on form. There's a few lads in there that have played some super rugby. And yeah, like, the combinations I hope will go well, especially in the back row. They haven't played much rugby, 9 and 10. It's key pivotal positions that you need to go well. And if they do go well, Marie, you could see this 9 and 10 combination playing the second test and the third test if they go well. I know a lot of Irish fans, myself included, would have loved to have seen Conor Murray starting at 9, but maybe he is a man to come on and steady the ship with half an hour to go and try and get the Lions over the winning line.
That's the thing, though. Like, there are a lot of ifs there. So there is a lot of uncertainty in key areas. And look, I think especially the 9 and 10, really. And if it does go well, brilliant. But if it doesn't, it's not a great foot to get started on.
Marie, let's not go down the negative route here. We're trying to be positive.
I'm a realist.
Yeah, I think it's exciting. Like, that's the way I'm kind of looking at it. And I know you can look at it the other way and say, oh, geez, if they don't go well, Ali Price is very limited experience at international level. You know, his box kicking isn't anywhere nearly as good as Conor Murray's. But, like, I think that these two players at 9 and 10 can take the game to South Africa and get some of the big Lions players into the game, the likes of Jack Conan, the likes of Courtney Laws at 6, even Tag Furlong in the front row. These boys will be able to get these guys in the front foot. And I just can't wait for it all to kick off. The Lions beat the South Africans, generate defence. The huge power that they generate in attack, there's going to be so many dominant tackles, big hits. We can all remember back to 2009, especially that second test where there's four or five lads went off injured, Brian O'Driscoll being one of those. You know, Adam Jones dislocating his shoulder. It was just so, so physical and intense, and the pressure was huge. And one person that hasn't been mentioned this week and is the referee. Nick Berry is an Aussie ref. And he's got a big, big job on his hands to make sure that everything runs smoothly. And I hope it's a clean game, a hard-hitting game. And, of course, the Lions come out on top, but I think it's going to be very, very tough for them.
Well, it's probably worth pointing out right now, Stephen, that you would have a lot more experience than I would now, having been a Lion before. So your opinion would carry much more weight than I would. And if you're confident that they've had enough time to embed and to get a style of play going and that they're going to be fine, then I'm going to go with that. And just in terms of where you think that the Lions are going to be able to get those, what are the key areas that you think they're going to be able to expose?
Well, they made a couple of mistakes against South Africa. A loose kick, Cheslin Colby catches it, it's in space, a lack of communication in defence, obviously a bit of magic as well from Colby. The charge down from Etzebeth on Owen Farrell, that led to De Allende running 15, 20 metres, passing the ball to Nkosi, who scored a fantastic try in the corner. And then that was just two mistakes, and it cost the Lions 14 points. And they can't afford to be loose with anything tomorrow afternoon at 5 o'clock. They got to make sure they shut everything off. No unforced errors. Make sure that the line out and especially the scrum goes very, very well. I think the scrum will go well for the first 50 minutes or so. But the power that the South Africans have off the bench, Mal Herb, Kits Goff, Malcolm Marks, you've used the legger as well in the second row, who's a brilliant tight head lock. So, I think if the Lions can get their noses in front and get a fast start as a reference, then I think we'll be really in it come the 75th minute. And it's just about knuckling down, but they got to play a bit more rugby, try and get them on the edge. But how do you do that? You've got to win the physicality. You've got to win those one-on-one collisions, get them over the line. And it doesn't matter, Marie, if it's an under-15s game or a club game level here in Ireland, whether it's Blackrock versus Shannon, you know, the team that wins the contact and wins the physicality stakes generally comes out on top, and that's what the Lions have got to focus on.
Okay, so you're confident?
I'm confident that the Lions are going to give them a really tough game, but I'm going to go with my head on this occasion, and I'm going to say that the South Africans are just going to sneak it. Razi Erasmus, if anybody has watched the Rising Sun documentary, watch it. The inspiration. The country is on their knees at the minute. They're a team that comes together and fights for every single person on their land. So I feel that there's going to be another statement made by the South Africans tomorrow. Unfortunately, it's going to be the Lions will feel the wrath of that. But you never know. I hope I'm wrong. But come on, the Lions.
Yeah, it'd be great to get a good contest anyway. Stephen Ferris, thank you so much for joining us. And remember as well that we will have that game live here on 2FM from 4:45. Bernard Jackman will be with me in studio, and Michael Corcoran and Donal Lenehan are on commentary duty from South Africa. Now it is time to turn our attention to racing, and Jane Mangan is with us. Jane, before our focus completely shifts to Galway and Goodwood next week, there is this small matter of the King George at Ascot.
There really is, and I actually don't know how your focus is anyway away from Tokyo and the Lions, and there's so much sport going on right now, so I'm very appreciative to get a focus in here on the King George and that minor detail of what goes on around Ireland every year. But we're so lucky in Ireland to have representation at the highest level in so many sports, and racing is no different. Aidan O'Brien saddles the favourite for the feature race at Ascot tomorrow. The King George and the Queen Elizabeth Stakes is often referred to as the clash of the generations, where the three-year-old colts and fillies finally meet their elders, and we get to see if the three-year-olds are really up to scratch. So, for instance, tomorrow we're going to see Adair, the horse that won the Epsom Derby for Charlie Appleby and Godolphin. It's his first run since Epsom, and he's going to meet Love. Lone Eagle, do you remember that horse at the Irish Derby where he nearly stole it under Frankie Dettori, only to get run down close home by Hurricane Lane? He's also in there. Wonderful tonight, the Hardwick winner from Ascot. Mishriff, the Dubai Shima Classic winner and Saudi Cup winner in there, and Broom, outsider of the field for Aidan O'Brien, but on his last start he won the Grand Prix de Saint-Cloud in France as well. So there is a small field. I'm a big believer in Love. She's winning. She's after winning five Group 1s already, and she's going for her fifth consecutive Group 1 win. This is the toughest opposition she's going to have ever faced, but I hope she proves that her reputation is exactly that.
Well, I know that Ruby's a big fan of Love as well. He has mentioned, I just remember the word, you know, it's not often you hear Ruby saying the word love, but he definitely says it quite a lot. So he's a big fan. So Jane, let's move on to immediate matters. Jessica Harrington will be watching the 7:30 race from York this evening very closely, because Alpine Star is in the Lyric Stakes.
She is in around 33 minutes time. Anybody who has the access to watch York, remember that filly that won the Coronation Stakes at Ascot last year, as she went on to finish second to Palace Pier in the Jacques Le Marois, and then finished second in the Prix de l'Opera as well on Arc Weekend. Alpine Star is a top class filly. We haven't seen her since October of last. Obviously something amiss that she didn't run in the spring, and it's interesting that Jessica has opted to take her across the water to start her in listed company rather than run her here on Derby or Oaks weekend at the Curragh, where I'm sure there was races that were suitable for her. She's got a couple in here. There's seven in the lineup: Vasila, Sea Empress, Aristia, all genuinely decent fillies. But if Alpine Star is the filly that we saw last year, she's almost £20 well in with some of these, and I would hope at odds on shot she could put them away comfortably.
Right, so Jane, let's look ahead to next week. Galway, I'll be feet up watching this. You'll be down there working hard. What can we look forward to?
Do you ever put your feet up, really, though?
Up on the desk.
You've got kids as well as anchoring your own show. I think you'll have it on in the background in between jobs.
That's true.
We have awesome racing at Galway, as we always do. The Galway Plate for me is often the centre, the plate and the hurdle, the Tote Galway Plate. I'm interested to see the Shunter back, the horse that won in Handicap Company over fences at the Cheltenham Festival, was second in a Grade 1 novice at Aintree. He is topping the market at the moment for the Tote Galway Plate. Royal Rendezvous, second in the race last year. Can he go one better? Henry de Bromhead seems to have lined up walk away for this race. And Joseph O'Brien, winner of the race last year with Early Doors, saddles Top Moon for the same connections of the McManus family. The Hurdle Sole Pretender would be a great result for Norman Lee. Saldier, probably the class horse in the race, but he has a big weight. Belfast Banter for Peter Fahey, also a Cheltenham Festival winner. And Shark Hannon's wonderful filly Sky Ace, another interesting contender. Don't forget Goodwood. We have strong contenders in the Nassau Stakes, the Sussex Stakes and the Goodwood Cup. Probably the strongest Irish challenge is Poetic Flair for Jim and Jackie Bulger in the Sussex Stakes. He's been awesome so far this year, and I would expect with the omission of Palace Pier that he will continue his winning run.
Jane, I know you're disappointed about the crowds, though, or the lack of crowds in Galway.
Yes, I just didn't think that it would materialise as such, because Marie, we often, we go into Super Value, we go into Centra, and there's as many people in those supermarkets as there is at a wide open outdoor venue. So it's a little bit frustrating. I think it defies common sense, but we take the guidance that we're given and we have to roll with the punches and hope that things eventually open up. But I don't understand why we all rush to get vaccines when we can't go to an outdoor event if we are fully vaccinated.
Well, on a positive note, we will be able to watch yourself and Ruby, both of you, hosting the Galway races next week. And actually, Jane, I've just got a text in from my husband, and he said, I'm the one that minds the kids. So he's en route with my three, Timmy, Billy and Davey, and their friends Corey, Evan and Nathan, to watch Six Mile Bridge in Cracklow after they spent a lovely week in Clare. So on that note, Jane, I think I'm going to go home and see them when they come back up. Enjoy the racing this weekend. Enjoy Galway as well. Hopefully I will be chatting to you. That is all we have time for on the show this evening. We'll be back tomorrow with the live commentary of that Lions game against South Africa. I'll be in studio with Bernard Jackman, and Michael Corcoran and Donal Lenihan will be live from South Africa. And if anyone is looking for Olympic information, there is plenty of it on the RTÉ website, where you will find all the details of every single Irish athlete and when they are in action. So everybody have a great weekend. Blána Tracy is up next.